How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvers and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is June 7th, 2011, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We have tons of stuff to talk about today. It was essentially a three-hour Raw. It was a one-hour Tough Enough, the second half of which was live before the Raw audience, and then a two-hour Raw, which I don't even know what to say about this Raw. This was a Raw where when it was over, it was kind of like one of those Impact episodes where I just thought, and this built up the pay-per-view, how? We'll talk about that. Plus, a lot of MMA and pro wrestling news, release of a very famous book, the re-release. So a lot of stuff to talk about today. And Dave, what's going on?
I don't know. Let's just get into it. I guess we should start with Andy Levine winning in Tough Enough.
You know,
we talked about this beforehand, and I kind of figured he was going to win. And I talked to some people, and I kind of have a feeling of, you know, why. I mean, I know, like, everybody expected Luke Robinson to win, and there's two things absolutely, when I watched the clips from Florida, when they came back, it's like either one of two things happened. Either Luke Robinson had a shoulder injury, and just from looking at it, it looked like he had, like, a serious injury from his right shoulder, because his upper body just, like, It lost its size, it lost its definition. His body looked very good on the show, didn't look good. So either he didn't train and his body went to hell, in which case he's an idiot. And I don't think that that's the case. I think he was injured. But when he showed up looking like that, injured or not, I know the way these people think. And it's like before, it was always to me like, well, you know, Luke's got this. But the other guy's the big guy, and they're going to pick the big guy at the end of the day because they're going to think that the big guy's got more charisma. I mean, not charisma. Actually, way less charisma. But that the big guy is the going to make it because he's a big guy. But when he came looking like that, you know, like I said, injured or not, I knew that Luke didn't stand a chance. And whether he deserved to win or he has more potential. In their way of thinking, he doesn't. And the most telling thing, I was on the phone this afternoon talking with someone one of those people whose names I shouldn't say, so I won't. But anyway, we were talking about Tough Enough in a lot of depth, actually, because he'd seen every episode and, you know, which basically said, you know, Luke's going to win. And I said, Andy's going to win. He goes, you know, Luke's got all the charisma. And he goes, like, Andy doesn't have the it factor. Luke has the it factor. Which is so funny because when they brought them in the ring, Bill DeMott says, I'm going with Andy because he has the it factor. And I'm just thinking, like, that's the one thing he doesn't have, is the it factor. And it's like, they look and see a guy with no charisma, but he's big, and they think that's the it factor. And I finally figured it out. That's the whole Daniel Bryan thing. When Daniel Bryan came in, remember that whole thing, he doesn't have the it factor, David Otunga's got the it factor? And it's like, David Otunga didn't have the it factor, Daniel Bryan did. Their idea of it factor is only one thing. It's your physique. It's not your charisma. And so anyway, the point is, if Luke had shown up and his body looked better, he would have had a better shot at winning, but it didn't happen. And, you know, it was pretty much, you know, I mean, they didn't even try to swerve. I mean, like, that was like a shoot among shoots when they had all three coaches, because they went in there and they had Booker T, Bill DeMott, and Trish Stratus, and all three of them said that they would pick Andy to win. And I was thinking, like, there's no way, because I know how they, you know, like if it's the Vince Russo thing, then, like, Steve Austin goes, Luke's going to win. But he didn't. They were all shooting, and they all thought that Andy was going to win, and then Andy won, and then Vince McMahon slapped him in the face, and Austin gave him a stunner. So when it was all said and done, I was thinking, like, that was nice. Now, what did we just accomplish in the last 13 weeks?
Yeah, the first clue that I had, the first moment where I was convinced Andy was going to win was at the very beginning of the show, where they show the training and Andy's out there and, you know, he's there with his family, but his wife is training him and she's getting him in shape and he's, you know, obviously WWE is, you know, they don't want these people to be called athletes and this sort of thing, but he's actually training like, okay, I really want to do this. And they cut to Luke, and obviously these things, you know, they choose what they want to choose, and they build the show how they want to choose it. But what they chose for Luke was him saying, You know, I came back and I partied. And I want to go on the road and I want to live the life and party. And then when I get off the road, I'm going to come back here and party. And I just thought, well, you're fucked.
Absolutely. I mean, like the way that they edited it, by the time they edited it, they already knew. And I think that, you know, a lot may have rode on the thing in Florida a couple weeks ago where, you know, and Andy had a huge advantage because Andy had worked in front of those people and they knew him. And Luke was a complete unknown other than, he had been on that show, but I don't know how much it meant because I heard that, like, Luke came out and nobody knew who he was. And you know how it is when you go in front of fans where everyone knows who you are versus nobody knows. So Luke got no reaction, and Andy got a big reaction. And so Andy came across like a star. And you know, for their purposes, I mean, the reality is there's something that Luke had. There was a cockiness. You know, I could really see it where you know, he maybe could have been something. But it wasn't going to happen here. You know, I mean, the thing that was going to, you know, like I said, what killed it for him was when he showed up in Florida with his body looking like it was, and because one side looked so much weaker than the other, I think it was an injury. And someone else, I don't know this is a fact, but someone else who kind of had told me that he was like holding his shoulder a couple times. So you know. I mean, if you got a real life shoulder injury, that's the worst thing when it comes to upper body, making your upper body look good, because you can't do shit with a bad shoulder. Unless you're gonna, take all kinds of roids and things like that. And evidently he didn't do that, and he probably was scared to do that because I'm sure they probably drug tested. And if they do before you sign a contract. So whatever it was, the injury may have screwed up what little chance he probably had, and he probably didn't have the chance, because the other reality of the show is that, you know, the Andy and Christina Crawford were sent to the show by WWE to win the show. Now, that doesn't mean that they were guaranteed. They still had to go and win, but the point is they were sent there, whereas the other people were picked, you know, by however these guys are picked, you know, casting call and things like that. But, you know, Luke Robinson was an independent guy, and you know, the reality was that they thought he was too small. The other thing that I was told, and this is from someone who basically, you know, knows the whole thing, and we were talking just a couple days ago about this, and then he wouldn't, you know, the thing that I was basically being told was that they were very disappointed as far as the guys. They didn't think that, and girls, they didn't think anyone was what they wanted them to be. And I brought up, Luke kind of has a personality, and everyone knows who he is now. And he was the best worker in the group. And it was like, the problem with Luke is he's 203 pounds. And the other thing was, he will get killed in that locker room. And they said, he will get killed. That attitude, that cockiness for a little guy who's never done anything, going in that locker room, he will get killed. He doesn't have a prayer. Whereas Andy, you know, Andy, they'll resent in the sense of, you know, getting in on the reality show, but he's a big guy and they'll respect that he's a big guy. So that's probably, you know, I mean, it's pretty good insight from people who are pretty close to the situation.
Clue two was his physique. I mean, I've made the comparison many times. You know, there is a look that WWE wants, and when you look at Luke, you know, you can compare him to, for example, you know, Dolph Ziggler before he dyed his hair back, or Ted DiBiase, or Randy Orton, or the good example tonight would be Alex Riley. And when he showed up and he's small and his body doesn't look very good, the question immediately becomes, what do you have that Alex Riley doesn't have? Alex Riley, of all people. You know, Alex Riley is taller, better physique.
He's taller.
Taller, better physique.
He has and Alex Riley is a good promo guy. But Luke is probably at the same stage, a much better worker, without question. And he's also...
I don't think so. I really don't think so.
I was pretty much told that mechanically, I was told that Luke was pretty damn good. And well, I mean, that's from people who, you know, who were right there. They said mechanically, Luke was pretty damn good. That's the one thing he had.
All right. Well, Alex Riley, I thought, did all right in the main event tonight. And the other clue to me was when they didn't show the matches with Bill DeMott from...
Well, they didn't show either of them, which told me that both of them weren't good.
Well, I took something differently from that, because the reports we got were that the people were into Andy's match and it went pretty well, and Luke's match did not go well.
Right. And Luke even admitted that it didn't go well.
Yes, exactly. So what they had to do... unless they wanted to completely spoil the entire thing by showing Luke having a poor performance and Andy having a good performance, they pretty much had to show clips of both matches. You can't just show clips from one because that reveals that the other one sucked. And if So once that happened and they went back and, you know, Luke, you could just tell the look on his face that he knew that he just fucked this up big time. You know, that to me was the final clue that, you know, there's just no. And, you know, the other thing is you did mention, I mean, it's more than just, you know, being small and getting eaten alive in the locker room. But Andy has a deal where, you know, A, he is a big guy, which is what they like. And more importantly, he is, you know, you mentioned not having a lot of charisma and that sort of thing. But in its own strange way, they really want you to have charisma. But in the locker room, you got to be a big, quiet, humble guy. And
when you start out.
Yeah, and that's
what
Andy was.
But then they get mad at you for not standing out.
Exactly. It's a catch-22. But yeah, Andy had the big, quiet, humble thing going for him that Luke absolutely did not have.
That's true. You know, like I said, that they felt that he would survive in the locker room. He would be... That they wouldn't accept him right away, but he would show respect and all that. While the other guy would come in, and they just like I said, he was going to get killed in the locker room, just by the fact that he was cocky, wanted to be a rock star. And again, you know, what had he ever done except for Independence in you know, Maine type of thing? I thought that Andy. You know, and the decision was already made, but I thought that Andy did a really good job of, in his promo, where he said that, like, here, you know, we want Division I football players, NCAA wrestlers, pro football players, and he's some guy who played high school softball. He's not nearly the athlete I am, which is interesting only because athletically in the ring, you know, Luke was better, but they would rather have the guy who's got the credentials. I remember one wrestler in WWE, actually, you know, it was this Canyon, you know, who used to tell me that, you know, if you're going up there, just make up that you were an amateur wrestler, because they will take you and they will respect you, and they'll never check it out, which is, you know, actually, which probably isn't true, but he believed they'll never check it out. You just lie and say you're an amateur wrestler, and they'll respect you in a whole different way, and you will have a much better chance to make the main roster because of paper credentials than if you were just a guy who, he was captain of the baseball team in high school and never played college sports, which is, I think, you know, probably about where Luke stood. I mean, Luke was an athlete, you know, obviously, but Andy, you know, Andy did play college football at a high level. He started, you know, he was in the Dolphins camp just last year and didn't, you know, and wasn't drafted or anything like that. But, you know, I mean, he was a football player. He was a real college football player, and he's a big guy, and he's an athlete, and he's what they're looking for. And at the end of the day, you know, when it came to that competition, it was Andy, Christina Crawford, and probably Eric Watts' competition to lose, and Eric Watts lost, and Christina Crawford got hurt, so Andy was the last man standing.
No Rima.
Well, Rima, you know, yeah. No,
Rima. She wasn't there tonight.
I didn't. You know what? That's the first time I hadn't even thought about it.
Yep.
Well, that tells you something, doesn't it?
Yes,
she was the only one who wasn't there.
Yeah.
So she wouldn't come back.
Yeah.
And what does that mean?
Well, she didn't want it as much as she claimed she did.
Well, we knew that, but it's interesting because Michelle came back, and Michelle really didn't want it.
You know, there were two things about that I have to say about Andy. Actually, three things. One is that I thought he choked when Vince was interviewing him, but hey, it's Vince McMahon in there.
Oh, you know, he had to be scared to death.
Sure. Number two, I was actually thinking about this, and when I thought about it more, I think he did the right thing, but a 6'5" guy should never take a bump for a slap from someone the size of Vince McMahon. With that said, it was Vince McMahon.
If he hadn't, oh my God. That would have been it. He'd have been like Pewter.
It was Vince McMahon, and so he made the right decision. But he
absolutely
better not ever...
You're right. You're right, but it's Vince McMahon.
Yes.
He had no choice.
Yes, he made...
It was really good that he was thinking on his feet there, because I'm guessing that was a swerve on him and that he didn't know. I could be completely dead wrong, but I'm just guessing that. The stunner, who knows?
I'm sure they said the winner's going to get stunned, you know. But
yeah. But
I will say,
do you think that they? I mean, they very well may have told him he was getting slapped. I don't know.
They could have told both guys. Whichever one of you wins, you're going to get slapped and stunned. So be ready.
Yeah, could be.
Now, I will say that the other faux pas he made, which I cannot defend in any way, is he got up way too fast from Austin Stunner.
Yeah, he did.
Went down, rolled out of the ring, stood up.
I thought the same thing. He was up. I was stunned. I put a terrible word, but yeah, when he was up so quick, I was like, well, "What are you doing?" You're right, though. Absolutely.
So we'll see. I always look at those things because, like, you know, people will get on me sometimes. Like, you know, I'll go all the way back to that one match that that Mr. Anderson had with Michaels and Triple H, and he was just god awful. And I thought, this guy's got a month left, and you know, he hurt Randy Orton, and he had about a month left. But you know, people get on me for some of these things. But listen, this is a really weird, petty company. And something as goofy as getting up too fast for Steve Austin Stunner, that can really be bad. I'm not saying that will be in this case, but things like that can really hurt you for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, if you remember on the last season of Tough Enough, which was 7 years ago, they did the thing. Remember when Big Show body slammed everyone and
yep.
they had to get back up?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Stephanie McMahon was going crazy. You know, part of it was because it was, you know, taped in front of the people. But these guys were popping up. And it's like they weren't told not to. I mean, so it was kind of like, but she was just furious about how, wait a minute, you know, they shouldn't be popping up and smiling in his face, which is what they did.
Yeah.
So, but it's like if they're not told what to do and they're green, you know, it's like they expect you to know everything. But if you know everything, they think you're too cocky. And if you've been trained, they don't like it because you weren't trained by them, so you're trained in different ways, which therefore makes it worse because we would rather have guys that we don't have to break their, quote, bad habits. But if you're not trained, then you fuck up, and then you make those mistakes, and then that's not good either. So it's really, you know, it is going to be tough for anyone. And again, you know, I mean, I know that company-wide, no matter what they'll say publicly, they were not high on any of these people. You know, somebody had to win. And, you know, he might as well be the guy because at least, like I said, you know, he's got that size, he's got a nice body, he's got that kind of, you know, if he ever woke up and figured out what he was and kind of got a clue, he's got like a real Bruiser Brody kind of beginning Bruiser Brody kind of look, and that's a look that they would, well, I would say they would want, except if that guy showed up, the real one. What do they do? Tell him to get his hair cut and quit barking, right?
Exactly, yeah. Take those stupid boots off.
and get those furry boots off, yeah. Oh, well. But
why they stunned him, I have no idea. Made him look like a complete geek.
I think the slap was worse. At least the stunner at Steve Austin, and everyone takes the stunner.
Yeah.
I mean, it served no purpose, don't get me wrong. But the slap from Vince, it's kind of like, I couldn't even figure out what the purpose of that was.
I could almost see
the stunner as your initiation.
I thought that Vince would slap him, and then Steve Austin would stun Vince, you know?
Well, that would have probably been the best thing of all, because that would have actually gotten a pop. Because when Austin stunned the guy, it's like they cheered because it was Austin, but at that point in time, they liked him. Because the one thing was with the crowd is that they really, and that's the funny thing, is Luke got them to where they really, he had that thing where they really wanted to kick his ass, and Andy didn't have anything like that. They just wanted Andy to win because he wasn't Luke. And that's where I really saw, like, Luke actually, when it came to in that ring, when the two guys were there, just his attitude and the way he just smirks and everything, he actually has something, and I think that they didn't. And again, he wasn't going to last in the locker room because of it, but he had something. Like, if I was TNA, like, I'm not saying I would sign the guy, but I would bring him in and I would give him an opportunity. Mm-hmm. You know, he's coming off of TV. Unless WWE signs him first for developmental, which they may, but I would take a chance and throw him out there, and if it doesn't work, you know, no harm, no foul. You know, you tried, but I would give him that opportunity to see if he can, you know, be that arrogant guy. And again, in TNA, the other thing is the body and size are not the detriment that it would be in WWE.
So then Truth came out of all people, and he was dressed as a Confederate. He had the hat, the jacket, the musket. He looked completely ridiculous.
We were in the heart of the Confederacy, Richmond, Virginia.
Yes, we were.
The Confederate capital of the capital where Jefferson Davis was. And in fact, we got a history lesson tonight.
Yes, we did. And to me, it was like, You know, I had a mixed reaction because it was like, no one in the world could have done this as well as Truth did this evening. But at the same time,
he was pretty damn great, I have to say.
He was fucking great. But the problem is, he looked like a complete clown, and he's headlining a pay-per-view in 2 weeks.
Yes. And there was nothing that I saw when he was in with Cena that said, man, I can't wait for their pay-per-view match.
You
I mean,
don't
it's not
say.
Like they, it's not like they killed it, but it's like, they weren't really, you know, they didn't do a good finish. Again, you know, they did one of those finishes that accomplished nothing.
Oh, we'll get to the main event here in a bit. I thought you were talking about just this here. This here was like a Halloween party. No one needs to see a fight at a Halloween party. But he...
Well, certainly not a pay-per-view.
He just acted like a complete goofball, and he was great doing it, but, you know, this is like... This is the shit they do in TNA, where, you know, there's a time for comedy, and there's a time for being serious.
Okay, well, in their defense, they still have next week.
They do still have next week. Although, there is absolutely no evidence whatsoever that they are going to fix it next week, based on the last 3 weeks.
You're right. They still have next week, and so they can kind of say, well, this week is kind of like we're just going to goof off. And then
yeah,
next
but,
week we'll
but
hit
again,
it hard.
Last week...
Now, the problem with that is next week's a three-hour Raw, and whenever they do three-hour Raws, they always like are so into this three-hour Raw and promoting the following three-hour Raw that I just feeling that you know, the pay-per-view will end up being an afterthought again.
Last week they did a bullshit finish. You know, R-Truth got a fluky win. And then this week he got another fluky win, and so I could almost.
Yeah, but last week's was bad, but this one was like, is you know what? I can't even defend last week's because I thought it was really bad. But this week's I can defend perhaps even less.
It was horrible,
because when this thing was over, it was just like, okay. I mean, there's so many ways you can book this that
would mean
something, and you managed to, you know. You know, it was one of those matches where everyone looks like a goof when it's over, instead of like the two guys, which it should be Cena and Truth somehow or other looking strong, and Miz and Riley, you know, doing something where Miz gets fucked due to Riley, and
that happened.
What?
That happened.
Yeah, to a degree, but then they reversed it, so like there was no. It didn't really matter.
Well, we'll get to the main event in a second. But my point is, they did a bullshit finish last week. They did a bullshit finish this week. So I could almost guarantee with 100% certainty that Truth is going to get a bullshit win over Cena again next week. And we're supposed to think that that's going to make us want to see this pay-per-view match, which it's not going to do.
Well, it depends on how it all depends on how it's. I mean, a bullshit win, if it's done in the right way, is good. But last week's wasn't the right way. And this one, like when it's over... There was nothing in that bullshit win where, oh my God, John Cena needs to get revenge, or oh my God, your two emotions are either John Cena needs to get revenge because this guy fucked him over, or this guy does something to John Cena and you're going like, oh my God, he can win the title, he's that good. And when this show was over, obviously you didn't come out with either of those thoughts.
Yeah, but the problem is right now in WWE, the wins and losses are just, it's unless you're Cena or Orton, the wins and losses are just all bullshit. And so there's like no way, I don't think there's any way possible that you could give Truth a bullshit win next week that will get people to care. Maybe if wins and losses meant something, yes, that would be possible. But right now they don't.
No, I mean, I know what you're saying. I wouldn't call it a bullshit win. I mean, if he just pinned him.
Yeah. That was a good one.
I know. I mean, the thing is, it's like.
Seriously.
If he like laid him out like with a chain and just beat his ass, the fact is that Cena's going to pop up and give him an attitude adjustment before the show goes off the air anyway, right?
That ain't happening. That is absolutely.
I mean, we already
happening.
Saw that with the last go home show.
I waited like 6 months for Miz to pin John Cena, and I'm still waiting. It's never going to happen. So the chance of it happening with Truth are even more slim.
Yeah, because at least with Miz, they actually like are behind him. Where I think Truth is just like a guy who's like a bridge, because we got no ideas, we got nobody, so we're going to throw Truth in there before we get to Del Rio, who's the guy, you know, who they really want in there.
If they're behind Miz, then if I'm Andy Levine, the last thing I want is for them to get behind me.
Yeah, well, he's going to need help. Miz at least has the promos.
Oh, my God. So anyway, they did a deal where Miz came out. Riley came out, the whole crew came out, and everyone made fun of each other, and the GM dinged and ended up signing Cena and Riley versus Truth and Miz with Austin as the guest referee. And maybe I am reading too much into this, but I did read something into Vince McMahon escaping the show without getting a stunner.
Mm-hmm.
Too old, hurt, something.
Yeah, he is old, and he was told by his doctor to take no more bumps.
Well,
so hopefully he doesn't take any more bumps.
There you go.
I mean, God, you know, let's face it. I mean, the guy hurt himself trying to be a pro wrestler. I mean, it's not like he knows how to bump or anything. And then and now, I mean, he's almost 66 years old.
Yeah. Santino and Michael McGillicuddy. I expected this to go 30 minutes, and
it only felt like it.
It felt like 30 minutes. It's a remarkably long time, and by that I mean way too fucking long.
Well, it was only four, but it was too. The thing that this match, we do have to talk about the one spot, which was when Michael McGillicuddy thought that Santino was going to slam his head into the turnbuckle, and Santino likely forgot the spot, and Michael McGillicuddy slammed his own head into the turnbuckle. It was like a, just a classic moment.
Amazing momentum.
Yeah.
Cobra finish. Not even a cobra in a roll-up. Just he hit him with his hand, and he got pinned.
Yeah. So. I thought that there's two things on Santino to me in this match that were both blatantly obvious. Number one is he is just so freaking entertaining. I mean, he's got, you know, again, he's a star. But he can't work at all.
No.
I mean, it's like you're going between the fact that he's just so darn entertaining in everything he does. He's funny as hell. But then you watch him wrestle and you just go, God, I mean, he is... After all these years in developmental and all these years on the main roster, he's like so far behind everyone else.
You know, what's funny is I know some folks that train in jiu-jitsu, and they've grappled with Santino, and he schooled them.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like an athlete, and he can do jiu-jitsu, but he cannot wrestle.
Judo background.
Huh?
He's got a good judo background, and you can tell by his hip tosses and stuff.
I mean,
he had a good judo background. He did one MMA fight. He lost in 20 seconds. So
you'd think a guy like that would be able to figure out pro wrestling.
Especially because, obviously, he's into it, because you wouldn't be that good in this fake character if you weren't, like, totally mentally into it. So, why athletically and work-wise? And he's been, you know, and it's not like he's some new guy. I mean, he's probably been doing this for probably, you know, I'm guessing probably 10 years. You know what I mean? Because he'd probably done it 6 years before he ever went to OVW.
And by the way, speaking of MMA guys, Jeremiah Riggs got the biggest pop of all the losers.
He was the only one that they cared about.
Yep.
Now, what's Jeremiah Riggs? The thing, you know, I mean, the problem with Jeremiah Riggs was he was just too green.
Yeah.
But it was funny because one person from there who I spoke with said that, you know, Jeremiah, you know, his problem was is that he didn't talk good enough. And I was thinking, like,
what?
Wait a minute. He's pretty, you know, I mean, AJ Kirsch was the best talker. But Jeremiah was probably number two. And the other one was that Jeremiah had a really good physique, which he did. He had a good physique, but he was just too darn small, which, you know, again, he is small for by their standards.
See, the thing, I got to say this, though. AJ's promo, he did like a great pro wrestling promo, which I guess is what you want in pro wrestling. But Jeremiah really impressed me the day that he got cut. Because Austin was trying to do the deal where I'm going to bury you 6 feet under, and Jeremiah was pretty damn quick on his feet. He was good.
No, I've seen his promos in MMA, and he's, if you ever see his MMA promos, you would be really impressed in the sense of they're not really I don't know if you would call them good MMA promos or not, but they establish a character that's not him. I mean, it's a complete fake character, but he does it just like a pro wrestler. You know, I mean, it's like he would fit in as the problem is be, you know, there's a lot of things that he's missing. But in the territorial days, Jeremiah Riggs would be a guy who would have a long career going from territory to territory and be a solid mid-card performer in every promotion he would go to, except for probably WWF because he wasn't big enough, but everywhere else, he would, you know, like in the southeastern territories, probably, you know, get a championship in Memphis type of a guy. I mean, just based on his persona alone and the fact that he can promo pretty darn good. But you know, work-wise, I mean, he just needs, you know, he's probably had like almost no matches in his whole life. So you're talking about Luke, who's been wrestling for years, and Andy, who hasn't been wrestling for a long time, but at least he's been wrestling for whatever it's been, like six or 8 months, since Florida signed him. So he was just too far behind. But yeah, he was the only one. You remember, everybody else walked down the aisle, including Christina Crawford, and nobody cared about any of them.
We had the Bellas against Beth and Kelly, and Beth was doing a comeback, hit an atomic drop, and then just fell down, popped right back up. I don't know if she got hurt, but she finished the match. She looked to me like she was kind of favoring her leg, but trying to make it look like she wasn't favoring her leg, so I don't know what happened. I hope she's all right, but there you go. We had Booker and Trish backstage, and Jack Swagger walked in as Booker was trying to teach Trish a Trish-a-rooney. And Swagger challenged him to a match later, saying he didn't think he was tough enough. And Booker T was never, like, a great promo, but good God, in 2011 on this show, he was awesome.
That was a good segment.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a lot better. You know, it wasn't so much the promo as the facials.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, but Booker made it like it was something special to see him wrestle, and he made it like he cared.
Yeah.
As opposed to he was, reading lines from a piece of paper.
We had Punk versus Ray yet again. They had a pretty damn great little match here. And finish was awesome. Mason tried to interfere. Ray basically kicked him and used his body as a base to do a tornado DDT on Punk. Went up top, big splash, 1-2-3. And they played it up that Mason's interference, his attempted interference, had backfired. But Punk did not chew him out, so I guess they're kind of doing a slow build to breaking those two guys up. I would guess. Could be wrong, but
isn't it a little early?
Well, I may have read too much into this, but that's what I got out of it.
Yeah,
Cena telling
it's two guys who are just killing time.
Yep,
but yeah, good match.
Cena told Riley he wasn't going to forgive him for costing him the WWE title twice. Was it but really twice?
Team with him.
So yeah, he said he'd still team with him, but if Riley left him out to dry, he said, and then he just shook his head in a disappointed manner. Plug best of WCW Monday Nitro.
Probably yeah, and they showed the worst of WCW Monday Nitro in the clips.
A lot of jokes you could make about this, but
best of Nitro, and then you see that one finger touch. It's like, oh boy.
We had an Alberto Del Rio segment.
You know what they should do is they should do like they should do it like your book, just kind of like this happened, and then business went down. You know, the next month, 40%.
I don't expect them to do that.
But they won't figure that out, will they?
No. We had a segment with Alberto Del Rio, which was 98% horrible and 2% great.
Oh, just Ricardo unmasking?
Ricardo unmasking. Ricardo came out as the Big Show. He had a fat suit on. He had a bald head on. It took me way too long to figure out who this was.
I had no idea who it was until like the last, right before he did it.
I figured it out. I
didn't know who it was.
I had no idea until Lawler said, you know who that is? And I was like, who the fuck is that? And then I looked real close and I realized, oh my God, it's Ricardo. Yeah. And he did a great job. And basically, they did some comedy, which wasn't really all that funny. Alberto would ask the Big Show questions, and the Big Show would raise his hand and roar, and it pretty much sucked. And then finally, Alberto got serious, and he said that bad things happen to bad people. That Show better never disrespect him again. He better not try to make Alberto his enemy, because if he did, he would get hurt. And he told him that was not a threat, it was a promise. And then Ricardo took off his bald cap and did the introduction, and the last 15 seconds of this made this whole segment worthwhile. But the comedy was horrible. Kofi Kingston and Zack Ryder. God bless Zack Ryder, but all the talk about how many hits his YouTube show gets, this match had no heat until Kofi made a comeback. And in a line that probably was fed to Lawler, he said, and I quote, "You can't tweet yourself to victory," as Zack Ryder did it, or as Zack Ryder did a job. Yeah. So,
yeah, but whatever.
He made TV for the first time in 2011.
He got on TV in a match for the first time since the draft.
That's right. So there you go. First Raw match in 2011, I believe he said.
Yeah. Oh, good for him. Maybe he can build on that.
They added Miz and Riley to the pay-per-view, which was fascinating because it gave away that the main event finish was not, in fact, a swerve when they were teasing what's going to be. Booker T and Jack Swagger Booker T is 46 years old.
Yeah.
Great shape and moves great for a guy that age. Of course, he's not
wrestling. Yeah, especially one who's been in the business for probably 20 years.
Yep. He did, however, do the same move he does at the beginning of every match for the past 20 years, where he ducks under and does a hammerlock. They had a fine little match until Swagger just walked out for the countout, at which point Evan Bourne ran out, and he threw him into the ring. Booker killed this poor guy with an axe kick, and then Evan hit him with a shooting star press for good measure, and Booker and Evan did spinaroonies afterwards, and if anyone on the roster should be able to do a spinaroonie, it's Evan Bourne, and boy, did he fail, but he tried.
Scott, you know the best spinaroonie on the roster is John Morrison.
That's true. He probably does, yeah.
Yeah.
Cena and Riley against Truth and Miz. Austin is referee. I thought Riley did a totally fine job here. Not a great work or anything like that, but he moves well, and I think he has promise, I would say. So
Oh, yeah. They
cut him off and beat him up for a long time, and then Cena made the hot tag. The big finish here was Truth brought a chair into the ring, and it got dropkicked in his face. Austin was getting it out of there.
What a dropkick, too.
Oh, my God. This was the worst dropkick you ever saw. So Riley gets...
No, it wasn't. I've seen some really horrendous dropkicks, and this was just... It wasn't the worst.
This one was horrendous, so you must have seen something beyond horrendous.
Okay.
Because this was... I mean, he dropped, I guess. That's the best I can say.
So.
It was identifiable as a dropkick, so I guess that's a positive. So Riley gets in the ring with the briefcase. He, of course, teases hitting Cena, but it's a swerve. He hits Miz, and Miz blocked it.
He didn't hit Miz.
It was like a cinder block was coming at Miz's head. He had arms extended at nearly arm's length.
He didn't come close to hitting Miz. Miz took that bump from that thing, never came close. Well, you know, Miz, I think Miz was probably scared to death because Riley, I don't know if Riley broke his nose the night before. Because, I looked at him, and it's like, you know, God, he doesn't look like he's a broken nose. And then someone told me, oh, they reset it and they put all this makeup on him. It's like, you can put all this makeup and hide a broken nose. I was told he had a broken nose from Riley being, whatever Riley did to him the night before. So you can tell whenever Riley does something with him, like on the pay-per-view the same way,
mm-hmm.
Miz doesn't want any part of it.
No.
You know, and again, Miz just had a concussion at WrestleMania. So, you know, I mean, if I'm him, I get it. But if it was, if put it this way, if he was in the mid, if he was the Miz of 3 years ago, I mean, oh, would it be horrible for him politically to have taken that, you know, to back off of that briefcase shot?
Yeah,
so I mean, he'll get away with it because he's a star now. But you know, and I, all things considered, you know, Riley already hurt him. Number, you know, I mean, Riley hurt him. He's hurt. You know, I can see doing it, but it looked terrible.
So he got hit with that. Austin gave Miz a stunner. Cena hit the FU, and that was the end of that. So,
well, then it got reversed.
Did get reversed, but a hell of a run Miz has had the last 3 weeks. Beat up twice by Alex Riley, stunned by Austin, pinned by Cena. There you go.
Yeah.
So, and that's the man they're behind everybody.
Yeah.
So then they
reversed. Well, the other thing is on this pay per view. They're in a bad way because Riley really needs to not lose this match, and at the house shows are doing double countouts because Riley just turned. He really shouldn't lose, but Miz is just doing nothing but losing. So, and he just lost the I Quit match, so it probably isn't good for him to lose. So, but a double countout on a pay per view is like,
who cares?
That's not good either.
Put it in the mid card and it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, as long as
I guess you put it third on the card and do the double count out.
Yeah, have good finishes in the upper card and it'll be fine.
Good finishes in the upper card. Good
I
joke.
Know. That was bullshit. So they announced next week. This was where I just lost my mind. First off, the finish is stupid enough. I'm just thinking, okay, what is Cena pinning Miz have anything to do with any of the matches on the pay per view involving these four men? Number one, number two. So, Steve Austin is a referee, and he stuns the guy, and he counts to pin, and announces the good guys as the winners. So, the GM dings, and he rules, the finish is bullshit, and so Cena and Riley are the losers via DQ. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, stupid, but hey, it makes sense. You know, Steve Austin, he did cheat as referee. You know, this what's fair is fair. That's all fine. So then, like, seconds after announcing this, the GM then proceeds to assign Steve Austin as the special guest GM for next week. That was the stupidest thing I've ever heard of.
That was like WCW, you know, level, you know, 2000 level. It really was. That was
astounding.
I mean, you know, all that stuff we say about TNA that's deserved. This was worse than probably 95% of the stupid stuff that they do.
I'd say 50, but still, you're right. This was just absolutely, just completely nonsensically, idiotically stupid.
Yeah.
And then Austin gave Cole a stunner, and Cena gave him an FU. I don't know why, but they did it. A baffling show.
I mean. I couldn't figure that out either. I mean, like, what's the purpose of doing it to Cole now?
They just wanted everybody to cheer at the end of the show, I guess, because they DQ'd the baby faces, but stupid.
But then why DQ the baby faces in the first place?
Because you had to have Truth getting another wacky win over John Cena.
But nobody even saw it as a win.
But they'll announce it next week.
If it was like something that Truth did, Truth was like not even involved.
It doesn't matter because they're going to come out next week and they're going to say Truth now has two wins over John Cena.
Are they really going to say that?
Of course. Even though everybody knows these wins are just complete BS, they're still going to say that and they're going to think that this is going to make us want to buy the pay-per-view, which we're not going to do. And then they're going
to
blame Truth.
When neither of them are wins that would win the championship.
Dave, they do this all the time. They do this all. They say so and so got X number of wins. Like Miz,
yeah,
has
I know
beaten...
they've done that with like all those. Yeah, but those
Sheamus.
Are always challengers that never draw on pay per view.
Remember when they kept talking about how Sheamus had all these wins, but like he fluke won the title when Cena fell through a table and all
that
crap.
Yeah, but at least he won the title.
Still, they think.
I mean, at least he won the title. I mean, these are like DQ and count. You know. Count out wins.
They pound so hard into our heads that wins and losses don't matter, and then they give a guy a bunch of bullshit wins and try and make us think that now all of a sudden this is important when it's even less important.
Yeah, okay, well here's the other thing too. Okay. To make it work, seeing this guy do this promo going like, I'm pissed because you beat me twice. And I mean Cena, you can cut his toenails, I mean like or his toes off. And he's not going to even get. And he's not going to even get mad these days.
He's going to come out.
He's
going to do
tell
a bunch of
jokes.
Stupid comedy for 5 minutes, and then in the last 30 seconds, he's going to go. But damn it, I'm mad. That's what he does every week. I'm down on this show. All right, Linda McMahon teasing a Senate run.
Deja vu.
Mm-hmm. Guess they didn't lose enough money last year. I don't know.
I guess so. Well, supposedly, like, she's going to have to make the announcement one way or the other in a month, but they certainly are teasing that, you know, I mean, everyone sort of had told me, like, within a week of the last election that she's probably running again in 2012, so, you know, I guess she's going to run again.
So this fella, Norm Clark, wrote an article in the Las Vegas Journal Review. Journal, Las Vegas, what?
Review Journal.
I'm sorry.
RJ.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Las Vegas Review Journal. Anyway, point is, he basically said that perhaps Joe Rogan should be fired.
Yes.
And this, of course, is stemming from what we talked about on Sunday, where Joe Rogan went on the underground and called a female reporter a naughty word. And Dana White has since responded to all of this controversy that we talked about yesterday on the program by saying... I'm going to read this entire statement, so everybody, hopefully you've got time to sit down and relax, because this might be a while. Joe Rogan recently made an offensive statement reflecting a personal opinion that does not represent the UFC in any way. I have addressed this directly with Joe. That's a statement.
Yeah.
So, apparently Joe's not going to be saying stuff like this no more.
Well, you know what? That's fine. You know, he shouldn't... I don't think he should have gotten fired over it. I'm just saying that if he was working for any real sports organization that was on a real network, he would have gotten fired over it. And so hopefully, you know, Dana told him, like, dude, you're really lucky that we're not mainstream. Because if we're, like, really popular and you do this, you're going to get fired. And, you know, he's, and the guy is really super valuable to the company. I mean, you know, on the countdown shows and everything, he's great. So hopefully...
I think it would be a complete disaster for UFC to not have Mike Goldberg and Joe Rogan. With that said, when they do their
but he can't afford to do this again.
No. With that said, with their annual get-together next year, when they do all of their stuff about don't take steroids and don't do this and don't do that, they need to sit down with these guys, and I don't care how bored they get, they need to have the big internet talk. The big...
Do not post full frontal nudity pictures of you.
That's a big one.
Do not. If you are in an argument with your wife, stay away from Twitter. If you are drunk, you know what they should do? They should do like the deal where you have to like breathe or your car keys don't work. You know what I mean?
There's a breathalyzer in your iPhone.
Exactly. They need to do that because these guys, it's like we talked about the minute they went all gung-ho. It's like, yeah, this stuff is a great marketing tool in the hands of the right people.
It's just so
ironic.
In the
hands of the wrong people, this is not good.
A great irony that like 2 weeks after they announced the bonus for the best tweet, Tito's penis is all over Twitter.
God.
There could not be better timing.
How is that? How can you hack that? Is that possible?
Here's the problem, though. Even if you hack Twitter, Tito still had to take the picture. You know
exactly.
What I mean?
Exactly. What the fuck? What is he thinking?
Well, he wasn't. I mean, that's clear.
Oh, Jesus Christ. It's like, man, whatever.
Yeah. You know, it's too bad.
The other one, too, is like, they got to stay off the underground.
What I feel bad for is the people whose Twitter actually does get hacked in this world, because now that's just a buzzword for I did something really damn stupid.
Yeah.
So anyway, everybody, protect your passwords and stay off the underground, at least if you're really mad at somebody.
And if you're a decision maker in UFC, also stay off the underground, because you're going to make bad decisions if you don't.
So what's up with MMA in New York? They've got one hurdle down, two to go, and 2 weeks.
Yep, we're just facing the time limit, and they got to get out of two more committees and onto the Senate floor all by the 20th. Or the session's over, and then they got to start from scratch all over again at the next session. The feeling is that if they get out of the committees, that they will get that and get a vote. If they get a vote, they will pass the vote. They were in the tourism committee today, and they got. It was 17-3 vote in favor, so there wasn't that much opposition. Now, there's the Ways and Means Committee is the one that nailed them last year, and the thing is the opponents, from what I gather, are trying to avoid the vote because they know that if the vote goes, that they don't have enough votes to stop it from passing, but they do have time as their ally, and they do have some formidable people in that state senate that are willing to do whatever it takes to stall this bill. So, it's anyone's guess what's going to happen. There's no sure thing either way. Bob Riley said that it is not passing. It's not going to happen. We'll see. At least they got it out of this committee today. If they had, not gotten out of this committee, then it would have been dead completely. The whole thing is stupid. I mean, the whole thing is, like, absolutely ludicrous. The idea of not being able to run a live show in any state in this country. If it wasn't on national television several times a week, even then it would be stupid, but at least you would have this argument of, we don't want kids to see it. Well, how many kids are going to go to a live UFC? A few that parents bring them, but it ain't going to be a big number, and it's not the point. The point is you can see it for free on television constantly. You can, so keeping it away from the arena and keeping away from, the amount of money that these guys can bring into the city and the state, I'm baffled because it's like the, I don't know. I mean, just the idea that this even happens just blows my mind.
Well, it's happened.
Yeah, I know. It still blows my mind.
Well, the one good thing is if 2 weeks goes and doesn't get voted on and they got to start over, at least they know they're well on their way.
Well, I mean, let's
it's inevitable at this point.
Let's face it. I mean, if it's this year or it's 2 years from now, bottom line is this bill is going to pass.
Sure.
And they are going to be running in New York.
Sure.
At some point. So delaying it makes, you know, it's kind of stupid. But, the reality is it's going to happen. I mean, and if it probably takes about two more years, if this thing gets a little more popular, it actually may even spur like a demand, like in Ontario, where, you know, you almost kind of like have to do it because of public demand. Because every year that, every year that this thing is around longer, the people who discovered it when they were a certain age get older, and then the young people coming up still get into it. So you got like a wider and wider base of people who actually want to see it. Even if it doesn't get more popular, it's more acceptable. Many major sports, websites, newspapers cover it like it's just a regular sport, and it's banned. It's not like this is bullfighting or something like that where I can kind of see why you would ban it. I mean, this is just ludicrous. And the opponents of it go, well, we banned bullfighting, and it's like, no one's getting freaking knifed their head cut off in this, as far as I know.
Well, the bull.
No, but bullfighting, but not in MMA.
Oh, yes.
I was saying, did they do in bullfighting? Exactly.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I said, I'm not against, I'm not a big proponent of bullfighting.
The, one of the best autobiographies, or one of the early autobiographies, Lou Thesz's book, Hooker, is being re-released.
Yep. With new material and...
New material?
Yeah, new material.
How are they going to swing that?
Oh, Kit Bauman, did hours and hours and hours of interviews with Thesz before he died.
I see.
The book, they cut the book into, he wrote the book in, wanted to keep it a certain size, and now it's going to be a bigger book. So they're going to include new material, and they're also going to, some of the stuff that Lou might not have remembered perfectly historically is going to be updated with how the history actually went as far as, like, timing and things like that. And, it's going to be from what I gather, it'll probably be a much better book than the first one. The first one was, for its time, it was an excellent book. And still, I would say it is only because it's the only wrestling book where you really, you went from generation to generation, and it was still firsthand among a guy who was, one of the three or four biggest stars in the history of the business. And from a longevity standpoint, you're talking about a guy who... grew up as a fan in the 20s, was a star wrestler by the 30s, and was still around in the 70s, and business-wise on the scene until the early 90s. Especially in the Japanese business, he had mid-90s even, actually, because he was doing the TV announcing for UWFI, and he was involved with UWFI until, UWFI had their financial problems. So we're talking mid-90s. So he was, you're talking about 60 plus a little over 60 years of wrestling knowledge, of being there, being at the top, going everywhere, being at the forefront of the beginnings of Japanese wrestling and being an icon of Japan and being a unique person in the United States. I mean, it's funny because it's like, he was a, when wrestling was on network television in the early 50s, Lou was one of the guys who was, I don't know what we would say a household name, but everyone, all the sports fans knew Lou Thesz in the 50s. But, when he got older and everything like that, his name by the 70s and 80s, people really didn't know who he was. I mean, his name disappeared just because of the nature of a lot of different things. But it never did in Japan. In Japan, he was still, a pretty darn huge name until his death.
Let's do a... Oh, and by the way, a Bill DeMott book as well will be coming out, so...
Yeah.
There you go. All right, a couple of questions here before we wrap it up. Since Dave mentioned Hooker being reprinted, it made me wonder, ever been any strong interest in someone publishing Stan Hansen's biography in English? I believe it was only released in Japan a few years ago.
I have never heard of any, never heard about it. I mean, I would think that there, Stan's career was as far as being a superstar, was more in Japan than here. I think there'd be some interest, but as far as like a major publisher, probably not going to happen. Crowbar Press type of thing, I could see it.
This person says, do you foresee WWE putting the Hall of Fame ceremony on the shelf in the near future? There aren't many marquee names left out there who people will buy as being headliner worthy. Warrior, Rock, Hunter, Undertaker are the only guys who come to mind. Actually, there's tons of guys. There's, you know,
Edge.
Foley.
Edge and Foley, sure.
Yeah.
There'll be people will come around and everything. Now, I mean, it's not going to happen. There, you know, it's tradition now. So yeah. It's going to be, you know, they're going to do it every year and until, you know, and when they don't have good guys, they'll pretend.
All right.
Maybe that year they'll induct Luthez.
Could be. Two more here. In an era where the bigger and better was the motto, how did superstar Bill Dundee get over when he was so small?
That was Memphis. It wasn't as big of a deal. Memphis, if you could talk, you know, and work a decent amount, you know, decent level. You know, the big thing in Memphis was always talking, and Bill Dundee was a great talker. So his size, and also he was a baby face for most of the run. I mean, he was a very good heel when the time came. But he worked with Lawler, who wasn't a big guy. And you know, him and Lawler had awesome, you know, chemistry because they would team for a while, and then one would turn on the other, and then they would feud for a while, and then they would come back and team. And, you know, they were just fixtures and everything. And then Dundee, after a while, was the, you know, he had so much tenure in the territory, he became kind of like a legend. But he was really made with he came in as a heel with George Barnes. But, I mean, I don't even remember how long he was a heel, because, you know, he was babyface, you know, for years and years and years, and had the big original feud with Lawler, and you know, the deal where he lost his hair and then his wife lost her hair the next week, or whenever that was. It might have been next week, but it was pretty soon thereafter. You know, that became such a big deal, and you know, he was in the office, so they always protected him because he was in the office, and he knew how to book, you know, and you know, not a lot of guys know how to book, and he definitely did, so that helped. And but yeah, you know, Memphis territory size wasn't as big of a deal as almost any other territory in the country. Plus, like I said, very good talker.
And finally, whatever happened to Sam Houston? He looked at one time like a great future star, and then things fizzled out.
All kinds of problems, you know, alcohol problems and, you know, things like that. Just you know, Sam Houston really was a hell of a worker, but you know, he wasn't a good promo. He didn't have a good body. He came at the wrong time when body, you know, Sam Houston's, you know, it was late 80s. And then he went to WWF, and I mean, I remember one. This is when he was still married to Nikla, Baby Doll, and it was Grizzly and Jake and Sam were all. I think Baby Doll was out of the business by this point, but no, she wasn't. I take that back because it was a Thanksgiving night, and Robin was there too. Robin Smith, who's Jake's sister, so. You know, and Grizzly was working at that point as a road agent for WWF, and Jake, of course, was, you know, Jake, you know, was a big star, and Robin, I think, was women's champion, and Baby Doll was working for somebody or other, probably in, you know, one of the, maybe for Croc, I don't know who she was working for, maybe Mid-South on that day. But it was a Thanksgiving, the point is, there was a Thanksgiving day, and I remember Jake making the statement that everyone in the family is working on Thanksgiving except for Mike, which was Sam Houston's real name. And he's the best worker of all of us by far. So I thought that was kind of an ironic thing. But he didn't have charisma, and he didn't have a body. And when you're in WWF and you're skinny like that, and, you know, that was, you know, you probably could have done a lot better now. But then, no way. I mean, you know, that was just the kiss of death for him. I mean, so that's the story on him. And then, I don't know, just, you know, in the 90s, you know, when he should have been in his prime and stuff, I guess he just never really had the charisma. God, the guy, you know, he's good bump taker, good overall worker.
And that is it for today, everybody. We're going to be back on Wednesday with a brand new show. We've got a bunch of different shows scheduled for this week, in fact. Wednesday, I should note, Steve Sims and I, it's going to be the last chance before Triple Mania. We're going to be joined by Conan. So if you have questions for Conan, post them on the board. Always a fun show with him. He's a very outspoken fella and a great guest. So a lot of stuff coming up. New Observer out on Wednesday, new Figure 4 out tomorrow. So check out the front page for more, and we shall talk to you again after a while.